Good morning. It's Friday, November 22nd, and you've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. My name is Jack Peterson, and I'm here, as usual, with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. It's a little gloomy outside, but it's nice and warm here in this radio studio. So I'm doing just fine. I wish it was snow instead of rain. But
yeah, it is kind of wet out there. I just came dashed in through the rain. And I'm going to throw it out there. It is at the cusp up at Schweitzer right now. They opened today, actually. It is snowing right now, but they're predicting a high of 36 today. Okay. But then it's going to get lower tomorrow, high of 29, high of 24 on Sunday. So Schweitzer, though they may get a little bit of wet snow today, it's probably going to be in good shape for first weekend of skiing.
It opens today at 9 a.m. I wonder if anybody's in their car on their way up there right now.
Let's guess one or two are.
Yeah, I think so. And we're joined by a new voice here in the KRFY studio. Grant Kersey is here. He's a staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee and the newest member of the Daily Bee's reporting staff. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Thanks. Thanks very much for coming in. You're the newest member of the Daily Bee staff, and you're also relatively new in town. What's your focus over there at the Bee?
Yeah, my beat is a county and courts reporter, so I cover county government or other issues that affect the whole county, whereas my fellow reporter, Eric Welch, covers the city and education beat, and then the courts as well, which encompasses a lot of crime.
Yeah, an interesting beat, and this is an interesting time to be covering, I think, particularly the county issues here in Bonner County.
Oh, certainly.
Since you're new in town, let's do a little introduction. How'd you wind up in North Idaho?
Gosh, because of the job. I was looking for a job in journalism, which can be very difficult to find these days, and I was really impressed with, for how small of an area Bonner County is, it felt like the Daily Bee had a pretty strong handle on the news, produced a good product, and I wanted to be a part of that. I like being in news in a community that's small enough that you can get to know people and make some good connections and really dig your feet in, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning before we went on the air, tell us a little bit about your recent professional background.
Yeah, so I graduated in 2023 from Colorado State University. I worked at the college newspaper there and made some connections that allowed me to go to Ukraine as a reporter for about 2 months after I graduated. And I pursued a story that followed a nonprofit called Sunflower Seeds Ukraine. And what they would do is they would fundraise in the United States, and then they would pick up non-lethal aid, and they would pack it into checked bags of travelers. And Lufthansa allows you to send over 5 bags with travelers, and they're considered humanitarian luggage. So they would stuff these bags full of aid, send them over to Europe, wherever these travelers were already going for business or pleasure or whatever it is, and then they would have someone else on the other side pick them up, get them over the border into Ukraine, and then they'd distribute them to frontline troops who needed the aid. So I followed a shipment all the way from Boulder, where it starts, and I just followed it all the way down the line from Boulder to Warsaw, over the border to a town called Rivne, and then from there to Kharkiv, where it was passed off to a group of frontline soldiers.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you were in an area of conflict.
Kharkiv. I wasn't on the front lines, but Kharkiv was bombed while I was there, which was definitely an experience. And you felt the war in Kharkiv quite a bit, a lot of destroyed buildings. And at the same time, it was very interesting because the populace was just going about their daily lives almost as an act of, a way to stand up to Russia's aggression in their eyes, is just to live as normally as they could despite the bombings, despite everything going on. So that was fascinating to see.
Where can folks read that story? Where'd you publish?
Oh, interesting story on that one. So I published it with a Polish news agency called TVP World. Now that's a state news media in Poland. Right after I got back, about 2 months after I got back, their government changed over from one party to another, and they completely redid their state media. So with that, they take down all the stories from the party that has been in power that they don't necessarily want up, and they put up all their own stuff. So my stories got taken down in that, but you can still find them on my website, which is grantkersey.com, grantkersey.com. if you want to read them.
Yeah, we do want to read them.
I think so. Yeah, I mean,
and I'm sure some of our listeners will as well.
Yeah. Well, Grant, if we have a little time at the end of the program, we can ask you some more about how you're liking it here in town and the rest about your background. But I'd like to run down some headlines here.
Let's do it.
Here in Bonner County, the Bonner County Republican Central Committee has been busy. They nominated Brian Domke, Rick Kirshner, and Doug Patterson for County Commissioner District 1 seat to fill the remainder of Steve Bradshaw's term. We've talked about this story on these airwaves before, but the chair of the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, Scott Herndon, alleges, and speaking for the committee, he alleges that Steve Bradshaw has moved and left the county and therefore is no longer entitled to hold office in the county. So the Republican Central Committee, following the procedure for replacing vacant positions, has nominated those three individuals. Brian Domke recently won election to that seat, so he will be taking that seat in January anyway, and he was their first nominee for the seat and would be expected to be picked. That goes now to Governor Little, and what comes after that, we'll ask Grant to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, because Bradshaw, of course, is saying he is a resident.
That's so right. Yeah,
he's not stepping out of that role. But let's circle back on that one.
Yeah. The Idaho Club, their Trestle Creek project has been approved. The encroachment permit was approved by the Idaho Department of Lands. For those of you following that ongoing saga, this is the latest approval. They were approved once before, and then following some changes to the shape of the proposal, they had to reapply for that encroachment permit, but they have once again been approved by the Idaho Department of Lands. So moving forward with the Trestle Creek Marina development. An interesting note from the Idaho Capital Sun. They went through the state election results, and the Secretary of State went through the state election results, but this compilation comes from the Capital Sun. 121,000 new registrants on Election Day, which is 50% more than usual, approximately, second only to 2020's 131,000 same day registrants. 917,608 ballots were cast on Election Day, which is a new record here in the state of Idaho. The Sandpoint Army Surplus Arson case, the building that burned down this summer, was delayed again on November 13th, this time for 6 months, as the defendant was once again declared not fit for trial. More county news. The Bonner County Emergency Medical Services, we mentioned this last week, that they had received an emergency $2 million loan from the county commissioners at a November 8th special meeting to continue operations through January. That topic dominated the meeting on November 19th as well, earlier this week. And Schweitzer opens today at 9 a.m. We mentioned that one already, but that's what I've got in that's my top news headlines for the week. Miss any big ones, do you suppose?
I think you got the big ones, the ones that we definitely want to talk about. And it just so happens Grant has actually been reporting on all these, these big ones. I'm interested in digging in first on the EMS, what developed there with the county commissioner. So Grant, you were probably in the room.
I was. I mean, I was in the room when the emergency meeting was held originally, I think 2 weeks ago, and then I've been covering it since. And it's definitely been interesting to cover. It has morphed over time. We're still trying to understand what happened. The commissioners are still trying to understand what happened. And they definitely have, they've focused very heavily on being transparent with the community, but also have asked for some grace as they try to understand, okay, well, how did we get here? Why do we have no money in this account when it looks like, the budget supposedly was fine? And how do we move forward so this doesn't happen again? And in this meeting on Tuesday, they put in some internal controls to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. So I think on Tuesday, they talked about how any time that there was going to be a check coming out of Bonner EMS's accounts now, they've got to clear it with the treasurer to make sure they actually have the money in the account to clear that. They said that going forward, if their cash on hand drops to 50% of what they have, within 50% of what they've determined is the bare minimum for 6 months of operations, then some warnings are going to go out, and Chief Lindsay will meet with County Clerk Mike Rosedale, and they're going to come up with a plan to make sure that they can get through that six-month period. So that they're implementing some changes already. Mm-hmm. But as far as long-term, they're still in big trouble. They've got, they're leaking cash slowly but surely. And this is for a lot of reasons. They've talked about how overtime hours have contributed to this, and salaries are kind of the big reason. But the other reason is that they don't bring in enough money from their calls that they go on. They say that their rates aren't as high as you know, something like Kootenai County's EMS is, and they need to raise those to try to recoup some of that cash. The other problem is that they haven't been taking the full 3% that they can to increase their levy every year, and because of that, they have not been bringing in as much money as they could have should they have just chosen to do that. Every time they get a new, you know, tranche of taxes, it's in late January and in June that they get those. So going forward, they're going to have to absolutely, you know, take that whole 3% increase on their levy, and they're going to have to try to grab some foregone, which is a complicated tax term that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But in essence, it means that there's a certain amount of money that they could have taken had they taken that full 3% and didn't, but they were, you know, they withhold or hold the right to still try to drag some of that money back. Mm-hmm. And County Clerk Mike Rosedale said that that could end up being an extra $240,000 by next January. So not this January, but in a year's time. So the tax anticipation note, the loan they took out, is going to get them through January when they get that extra, you know, flow of money from taxes. And then it's going to provide a bit of a cushion for them to operate while they implement some of these changes, try to increase how much money they're bringing in for the next year until that foregone comes in. And then they're going to take another look at where they are.
How quickly do they have to pay back that $2 million tax anticipation note?
So my understanding is it's a year's time, so they have to pay it back in a year. Mm-hmm. However, Chief Lindsay has said he would prefer to take out another one in a year's time rather than make some substantial changes to shift patterns or personnel now, because he feels that if we can kind of right the ship, so to speak, and make some of these changes and start bringing in money, then even if we have to take another tax anticipation note in a year's time, if we're on the right track and we're able to pay that one off as well, and we've been able to retain all of Bonner EMS's staff and the normal shift pattern that they're used to, that's the best thing for staff and the best thing for the community.
Mm-hmm. They have a new headquarters.
They do.
Put up this year. Did that come out of this budget? Is that the big chunk of change that they're missing, or
no? You know, interesting. That's a bit of a red herring. It feels like it's the same amount of money because it's, you know, it was $2 million.
Yeah, it's a similar amount.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. It's the same $2 million that they could have used in this situation. Mm-hmm. But in speaking with Clerk Rosedale to understand this better, he mentioned that $2 million that was pulled out of their budget to pay for the building or part of the building costs was backfilled immediately with ARPA funds. So these were funds during COVID to help retain, you know, personnel and help offset salaries. Now, there are questions, especially from Commissioner Williams, about whether that was legal to do. But that was the thought process at the time, according to Mike Rosedale for that commission. They decided, hey, you know, we can't use these ARPA funds for any capital investment projects, but we can use it to help pay our EMS staff, and then we can take that money out of their account and pay for this. So that money was immediately put back into their account.
Mm-hmm. You had a story, kind of a sidelight here, I guess, the Selkirk fire chief, Jeff Armstrong, he weighed in on this situation. What were his observations?
Yeah.
He did this at the commissioners meeting, yeah.
He did. He weighed in. He gave a presentation that was on both the local joint power authority, which encompasses, you know, has been kind of remade this last summer and encompasses a couple fire districts in the area. And he weighed in mostly on the Bonner EMS situation. And his big point was that, hey, there's this narrative that fire departments want to take over ambulances. And he said, that's not true. We don't want to do that. Ambulances are not a cash cow. Clearly, with the situation that Bonner EMS, you know, finds itself in, that's the case. You know, it's not like it's a huge cash flow for us that we really want to get our hands on. We're not looking to take over ambulances. We'd like to help. And he felt that this kind of feeling that they are out to take the ambulances has stymied some communication and some support. And so he was trying to get that out there and also offer kind of his thoughts professionally on bringing in a third party to investigate this. He felt that that was the best way to determine, you know, what has happened. Bring someone else in.
And he was suggesting some ways to increase efficiency. As you reported here, one of the ideas he suggested was co-locating fire personnel and EMS personnel in the same buildings.
Yeah, I mean, he brought these up not as like, hey, we should really look into this as soon as possible, but more of, you know, we can't just go with practices that we've done because this is how we've always done it. You know, we have to really question all of our practices. Are there ways to save money by something like co-locating? Does it help out for Bonner EMS? Does it help the strain if we have paramedics on fire ambulances, fire trucks, which he would really like? And he feels that, you know, if there's a paramedic showing up to a scene on a fire truck, there's no one in Bonner EMS that's going to not like to have that extra set of hands on a critical patient. Mm-hmm. But again, that can often be seen as threatening to Bonner EMS's job security to have paramedics on fire trucks. Mm-hmm. So he was just really trying to get folks open to questioning why we do what we do. Mm-hmm.
The EMS comes out of, I guess it's called Bonner County EMS. But is it a fully independent? How independent is it of Bonner County? Why isn't this coming just out of the general county treasury, but out of its own account at all?
Great question. So they are an entirely separate entity technically. They're an ambulance district. So they're a different tax district, which means that as a different tax district, they can't just take general funds out of Bonner County taxes, which is part of the problem they're running into. If they were under the county, then the county could find other money from their taxes to bail them out. They can't do that. Now, it gets confusing because the way that it's been set up, the Board of Commissioners also acts as the commission that oversees the ambulance district. And because of that, the line has been really blurred over time, over what kind of control or what affiliation they have with the county. But in looking back on it, they've determined, oh, no, they're a completely separate entity. It's just that the Board of Commissioners also acts as the head of this commission, which has brought up a question of potentially putting together a separate commission that really does just focus on the ambulance district.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
That one will continue to develop, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
A lot to come. Maybe we should talk about the new commissioner that we we got three nominees by the Bonner County Republican Central Committee to replace Steve Bradshaw. But, of course, Bradshaw isn't saying he should be replaced. Since this kind of flared up, he has been attending commissioner meetings, right? Though remotely.
For a small period of time there, kind of at the beginning of November, end of October, he wasn't in as many meetings. But now, you know, for the last 2 weeks specifically, I've been at a lot of those meetings, and he's made it to every one via Zoom. So he has been attending now, especially since this has all come up.
Mm-hmm. So what's likely to transpire here since he, I mean, who gets to say, yeah, the guy has vacated the seat?
Well, they've kind of passed the buck to the governor at this point. So they had 15 days under Idaho statute to pick those nominees, send them to the governor, and then the governor has 15 days to pick one of the nominees to fill the vacant seat. Or the governor doesn't have to. The governor can let that lapse, and then it goes back to the central committee for approval or choice. So it'll be interesting to see if the governor chooses to pick a nominee, or if the governor lets that go back to the central committee to pick the nominee.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, what happens then? I mean, one way or another, if there is a nominee, either a final nominee, either from the governor or from the central committee, and Bradshaw is still claiming that he has not vacated the seat. You know what happens then?
That's a great question. I don't know either. And there was some discussion of that at the Central Committee's special meeting this week, around just how kind of unique this situation is. And there were some members, some committeemen that felt that this might open the commission up to litigation, and that was a concern of some of them, because there doesn't seem to be any kind of oversight as far as who picks if this is legal or not. Now the governor might come in and say, "Hey, I've had some of my people look at it, and we've determined that legally this is what we're going to do." But if he chooses to send it back to the BCRCC, then it comes down to, I believe, is Bradshaw going to go through litigation? Is he going to fight this in the courts? Because otherwise, I don't see what other avenues are available to fight this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently there were three members of the Republican Central Committee that signed a letter to Governor Little that was a notice of improper action. So they were contesting this at this point. So, yeah, I guess it kind of goes to the governor. And here, governor, handle this mess, right?
Yeah, a little game of hot potato with this one.
Yeah.
Passing it around. And they were vocal during the meeting, this small group was, that they felt this was an overreach of power by by Scott Herndon as the commission chair. Mm-hmm. And they were quite vocal at the meeting about it. And then with this follow-up letter, I think that, it's not going away. They're going to continue to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Is it just so there's three members of the Central Committee who signed that letter, and is the committee unified in supporting Herndon here?
They certainly seem to be. When I was at the meeting, it seemed the majority of the committee was in line with Herndon's thinking on this and wanted to move forward. And there was a small subset a small vocal subset that felt that this was improper.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got about 15 days. We'll see what the governor does on that one.
Yeah.
The other kind of bigger story this week, I think, was that the Idaho Club's encroachment permit was approved by IDL for the Trestle Creek project.
And
you're writing about that.
I am. I'm still digging into this. This is, I've been here for 3 weeks now. So some of these stories, they go back a ways, and you got to read through them, and you got to try to piece together what's happened.
This is
an issue that's been going on. I mean, I think technically decades. The earliest I could find someone trying to put a marina at the mouth of Trestle Creek was 2008, 2007, somewhere around there. So this has been an issue for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I'm still digging into what that means going forward. But interestingly, because of Bonner EMS, it was almost kind of a side piece at the most recent Board of Commissioners business meeting. Even though this has been a huge issue historically, and I'm sure it will continue to be, especially with this new approval, which was announced right at the commissioners' meeting. They had received the approval the day before, late in the afternoon. So it was brand spanking new at that point. No one had a chance to read it or figure out what it meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a sensitive area because Trestle Creek is a spawning tributary to the lake for kokanee and actually other fish as well.
I think bull trout are the specific ones.
The bull trout are the species of greatest sensitivity for sure. Yeah,
right. Because they're qualified as threatened by U.S. Department or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and that has been at least in the last, I think, 4 years in this most recent project, the big sticking point.
So does the encroachment permit that ADL is approving? Does that have a bunch of conditions on it?
I haven't gotten a chance to look at it yet. So when I do, I'm sure I will write a follow-up story that goes into all of that, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet. And I'm very curious as well to see what's in there. And they did mention that in the approval, the IDL said that Idaho Fish and Wildlife supported this project, or not necessarily supported, but did not see any reason to hold up this project any longer.
And how's the Army Corps of Engineers involved? They have to permit it as well.
They do, and they pulled their permits about a year ago, to my knowledge, if I'm remembering it correctly. They pulled their permits about a year ago, and I don't know whether they have gotten, if they've come back on that or if they've reevaluated or where they are as well. And they mentioned in the meeting that there's a web of agencies that they need approval from.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of it. One permit. The Corps is going to have to approve it. apparently the Department of Environmental Quality has to improve it as well. So there's some more hoops for the developers to jump through.
Which is why they were asking for an extension. And they asked for a four-year extension, and the commissioners didn't feel like giving them a four-year extension. They decided on a two-year extension. And even, you know, Commissioner Williams didn't even want the two-year extension. She felt that it's changed so much from the original, permit that the Board of Commissioners issued that they need to bring it back, and the commissioners need to look at it and determine, hey, this has shifted dramatically. Do we still support this with all the changes that have been made?
Well, Grant, we have about 2 minutes left here of the program. Can you tell us, I don't know, what's coming up next in the Daily Bee? What are you working on what are we going to see next week?
Well, much of the same. A lot of these are ongoing issues. So I think that the Trestle Creek development is one that will continue to be of note. I think that the opening of the James E. Russell Building will also be one that's covered pretty closely. They have an open house on Thanksgiving at 9 a.m.
Thanksgiving. Yeah, it's kind of, people are saying, why are they doing it then? Well, because the turkey trot is held right there.
Yeah.
So all the folks that come for the 5K turkey trot, which is kind of a tradition in the town,
right,
will be able to poke their heads in and have a look at the new sports center there at Traverse Park.
Yeah, so I think that'll be ongoing, certainly. And then for the courts, I think I've got a couple stories coming out this next week as well. I don't want to talk too much to those yet, but definitely pay attention to those. And of course, Bonner EMS will be here to stay for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Chris, you're talking to Jason Welker.
Are going to be talking on Wednesday morning. That's the day before Thanksgiving, this coming Wednesday. And we'll be able to dive into status, maybe pin him down on when the actual opening date will be. There, it's just saying right now, I think early December. I don't know if they have a date yet. Yeah,
I haven't seen one, but again, this is, I didn't cover that story, so
yeah.
Well, that's coming up next week on the morning show, and let's see, I guess with that, Grant, people can read your writing in the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Yes, they can.
Newsstands every day, and then I think you mentioned Grant Coursey, but it's spelled com,
and I need to update that website, but that's where some of my older work is from Ukraine.
I'll be interested to read up on that a little bit. Are you a skier?
Oh, big skier, so yeah. I'm excited.
Are you heading up there?
Yeah, yeah. We had to coin flip, me and Eric, who got to cover opening day, because we both wanted to go up there and see it. No, I didn't.
Okay.
Well,
or you wouldn't be here.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's what he uses the excuse. Yeah. He came on last week, and I think he planned that, on this week, and he'd get to go up.
You always got to think a move or two ahead Grant.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, hello to Eric if you're tuned in, and if you're up there listening to it, or to any of our listeners who are up there in their cars waiting for the mountain to open in about half an hour, please be safe out there and have fun.
I'll mention they are open this weekend, but then they're going to be closed Monday through Thursday of the coming week, and they're going to open again next Friday the 29th. So, and then they plan to stay open. That's the season begins.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Thank you, Grant, for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
And with that, we're going to proceed with the rest of our programming day with a little Otto's Eclectic Mix. Bird Note comes on at 9 o'clock. And here's Janis Joplin. This is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay, Panhandle Community Radio.